good day, wherever you may be. I'm here with Kirk and also with Scott on Observations for Our Time.
Howdy.
Howdy, Kirk. We have devoted this program to producing a audio variation of the book called Observations for Our Time. And thus far, we have made our way through most of the ninth chapter. So the first eighth chapter, we're about three quarters of the way through the ninth chapter of Observations of Our Time. And with very few exceptions, we're not reading the chapter as they were written, although we are reading Yahweh's testimony that forms the basis of each chapter. But typically, our approach has been that we will read what Yahweh had to say, and then we will comment on it, share insights and conclusions, provide analysis throughout the presentation of his testimony as it has come together to comprise this book called Observations for Our Time. And this book began in a proverb, a mashal. It was Mashal 6, which was parental advice written by Dode, inspired by Yahweh, to those living in our time.
Wow.
And we then turn to the seventh Mashal proverb, which expanded on that story. And it did a lot to provide a comprehensive understanding of where we are, exposing and condemning both the religions of Christianity, Pauline Christianity in particular, and Islam, as well as politics and militarism, while at the same time exploring and commenting on what life is like in the covenant with Yahweh. They were powerful. And from there, we explored a number of things. We were compelled to read what Yahweh had to say about politics and government and patriotism and why he is so opposed to these things. And we did that through Shamuel. We then turned to the 91st Psalm because that's where it all began. But now, 16, 17 years ago. And we talked about the role that Yahweh's promises can play in our lives if we want to engage and do what he wants done. And from there, we continued to explore, in particular, the words of Dode. Now, he wrote the 91st Psalm, but we explored a number of his psalms, and then we actually turned to what we could learn about Dode in Words of Our Time, the Chronicles, and in Shamuel, 1st and 2nd Samuel. And we devoted a lot of time just to getting to know Dode, because what we found out is that he's the only person that God said, he is my son, and I am his father. And he's not just my son, he is my beloved son. And he's upright. He's correct. He's righteous. And we really spent a lot of time studying Dode because we could learn so much about him. He's somebody we can follow, we can emulate, we can be like him.
Yes.
And from there, we followed the trail of the covenant. We ran across a couple of words that we really did a lot of research on, actually three words. One was Zion. We wanted to find the location of Zion and what the signposts along the way meant, because God is very clear that these signposts he's going to post along the way home. And that's going to be the legacy that leads people who are searching for him to him.
Mm-hmm.
And we looked at Shemach, the branch, because it's the most common metaphor used to describe both Dode and Yosha. And what that branch, which is a primary branch off the trunk of the most important tree. What it represents in terms of the covenant. And we came across a word, henna, that we must have devoted three chapters to henna, which is behold. Look up. Stop what you're doing and pay attention. What I'm going to tell you is really important. And we followed henna through the story of creation, through the story of the fall, through the rise of Babel of confusion, Babylon, through the story of Noah and the flood and what it represents, right up through each of the terms and conditions for participating in the covenant and the covenant's benefits, including devoting a chapter to the final test, to Yahweh's means of assessing whether or not we have come to know and understand and have accepted and acted upon those terms and conditions of the covenant so as that we can spend eternity with Him. From that point, we turned to Yahshua. And the reason we did that is that in that opening Mashal, Proverb 6 that we had done, it became obvious, at least to me, I think to you as well, that there was a conjunction between Satan, the adversary, adultery, the whore, Babylon, religion, Paul, Christianity.
Yeah,
there was a nexus between these things.
Yeah.
And that nexus was profoundly important. And while Proverbs 6 and 7, as observations for our time opens, lay out the role of the church and the whore of Babylon and the connection between them, and Paul and all of how this has led man astray, and Satan's role with each of them, I knew that the 14th chapter of Yahshua of Isaiah, the whole story would come together. That's where we actually get to know how Satan manipulates political and religious leaders to achieve his objective, which is not to be worshipped as Satan in some occult ceremony, but instead to be the god of religion, to be Apollo, to be Zeus, to be the Lord Baal, to be the god of Christianity, the god of Islam, the Hashem of Judaism. And I felt that rather than just jumping into the 14th chapter, that we'd be better served if we tackled the most difficult book of all to translate. The one book where we have the entirety manifest for us in the Dome of the Scroll, the entire text of Yahshua dating back around 2,200 years ago, when that particular text was copied, is available for our investigation. So we have a very old source to check the Masoretic against and correct it. But there's no question, now you've begun to do some work in Yahshua, that his vocabulary is so much more extensive than anyone else's. That it's a lot of work. One does not translate Yahshua quickly. And I would tell you that if you're a native Hebrew speaker, most of the words in Yahshua are not words that you're familiar with. There were many words that he alone uses or that may appear one or two other times outside of what he has written. So it's a real challenge. And we began with Yahshua 1. And at this point in the coverage, I'm now translating Yahshua chapter 13. But it was chapter 11 that was Well, it changed everything.
Mm-hmm.
In terms of what we're doing. And we got a first inkling of this way back in the fifth chapter of Yeshayahu. We've done a number of shows where we're sort of keeping it in the family. We said, I think the teacher just gave us a gold star. I mean, it's a really big gold star from our perspective. It says, you know, I know what you're doing and I appreciate it. But it's so small that no one in the world would ever notice it. The best of all worlds.
No.
The eternal teacher telling us, hey, you got it right. Good job. but not so big that you get any acclaim. And I don't know about most people, but acclaim is a really bad thing. You don't want to be in the public eye.
Yeah.
Life is much better lived privately. Because you're just going to get nothing but enemies. And I want to tell you, people can bite.
Yeah.
And so we ran across this term called a neck, that a sign was being lifted up. And the fifth chapter of Yeshayahu, the sign was pretty inconspicuous. The chapter was about Yahweh working with Dod, his beloved son, to build a marvelously productive vineyard on Mount Moriah. And how they had done all the work to create this marvelous vineyard together, only to have man destroy it. And the heartache that goes along with that. And the neck, the sign, was being lifted up in conjunction with man's destruction of this glorious vineyard that Yahweh and his beloved son, Dod, had built. And so it was just a passing comment, thrilling for us to see.
Mm-hmm.
But since something, therefore, we could celebrate, knowing that no one else would even know it. It was very much like getting an attaboy that was just whispered in your ear. That changes dramatically as we enter the 11th chapter of Yeshayahu, which is chapter 19. So what we're going to do is we're going to put chapter 9 on hold for a moment. And we're going to move to chapter 19, which of observations of our time. It's entitled Spirit of Understanding. And the byline that introduces this chapter is really surprising for most, I'm sure. It reads, woe to those who write Scripture. Woe to those who write Scripture. This chapter, as I say, is devoted entirely to the 11th chapter of Yeshayahu. And since there is the possibility that it is addressing this program and this book, Observation for Our Time, let's just begin as the chapter opens. As we begin the 11th chapter of Yeshayahu, Isaiah, we're confronted by a word which is only found two times in the whole of the Hebrew witness. It's choter. So as we seek to properly translate the opening statement and understand who or what it is predicting, we must determine whether it conveys some aspect of the symbolic imagery inherent in Shamak, the branch, that we witnessed in association with Dod and Yosha. Or is it simply a stem, a sprout, a twig, and thus speaks of someone or something far less important? And since this is another verse that Christians believe validates their faith, our quest to understand will be far from pedantic. Now, while we're going to return to the opening statement of Yeshayahu, Isaiah 11:1, in a moment, and dissect every nuance so that we appreciate every aspect of it. Before we look to the alternative source for clarifying Choder, I'd like to read briefly Yeshaya 11:1. That way, at least, we know what the challenge is in terms of getting this right. So a blank, a choder, which could be a small shoot or a secondary branch, a slender stick or twig, a sprout or stem, a pliable wooden implement or rod as a measure or standard, a secondary source of growth serving as a living entity delivering progeny, an unruly and untrained tendril, or less productive sucker. Now, trindle is not a word. Tendril is not a word we hear a lot. And sucker probably isn't either, not in the sense of anything other than a lollipop. So it should be stated that a sucker is a branch of a vine or a tree that is typically not productive. It grows inside of the canopy of the tree, doesn't get quite as much light, and typically doesn't bear much fruit, if any fruit at all. And a tendril is a shoot off of a vine that can, in fact, bear fruit, but it needs to be properly arranged within the vine itself, you know, put on that trellis or pruned such that it can be an effective means of bearing fruit. And so this choder speaks of those kinds of things. Now, the reason this was important, getting this right, is because what follows is taken by Christians to predicting the arrival of no less than Jesus Christ, that he would be a descendant of King David. But if you look at this, the reason I was just stopped right there, I mean, I was just stopped cold right there, I could not progress any further, is that there is no way Yeshaya is going to refer to Yosha as a small shoot or secondary branch, as a slender stick or twig, a sprout or a stem, a pliable wooden implement. No, I mean, it ain't happening, folks. As a matter of fact, after in 9:6, remember Yeshaya 9:6, where he is speaking of the what really we found out it happens to be the celebration of Dode's life. And the fact that Yahweh is talking about reestablishing the Dode and his kingdom and his seat of great honor when he returns, and we enjoy the millennial Shabbat, the 1,000-year celebration of the Shabbat in Sukkah. There is no way, after writing that, that Yeshaya would call Dode a stick. As a matter of fact, he's already used Shamak, the mighty branch, to describe him. He's not giving him a demotion.
Yep.
To stick.
Yes, it's totally illogical.
It's totally illogical. So the moment you're there, you say, wait a minute. This is assumed to be Yosha, Jesus, the Christian Jesus. And we've learned in the past that typically when speaking of that, it's really speaking of God's beloved son, Dode. You come across the definition of this word and you're stopped in your tracks. It can't be either. It's beneath both of them. You think that Yahweh was going to inspire Yosha to speak of his beloved son as an unruly, untrained tendril?
No.
And I'm going to tell you, folks, you can't get primary branch out of this.
No.
Not what the word means. So, a blank, a small shoot or secondary branch, a slender stick or twig, a sprout or stem, a pliable wooden implement or rod as a measure or standard, a secondary source of growth, serving as a living entity, delivering progeny, children, you know, in the spirit, that would be someone that is contributing towards the number of people who engage in the covenant. An unruly and untrained tendril. Now, a tendril that you work with can be useful, but you got to work with it. Or a less productive sucker. A sucker is, as we've talked about, is an internal shoot that typically needs to be lopped off, pruned off. Has come out or will be extended, this is yatcha, from the stump or rootstock of Yushe to stand out and be noticed. A secondary branch or smaller limb, a netzer, from his root, which keeps him anchored and nourished, shiresh, continuing to bear an abundance of fruit, being productive while encouraging productivity in others. Parah. Now, being of the stump of Yeshe, that's a big deal because who was Yeshe's son?
Dode.
Dode. The most prolific spokesperson in the history of the universe for Yahweh. He said more about Yahweh and the relationship that Yahweh desires conceiving with us and how to properly observe the Torah, how to participate in the Bereth covenant, than anyone who ever lived.
Yeah. What more do you want?
Yeah. That's what came out of
Yeshe.
But stump, the word that is used there, which is Giza. Stump is cut down. And at that point, the tree is gone. All you got is a stump. Was Yeshe a stump when Dode was born?
No, absolutely not.
Absolutely not. Correct. Now, you could. He's been cut down now, so it's certainly that Yeshe would be a stump. You could refer to him as a stump now. But, you know, there's no indication he was a really short guy and therefore kind of stumpy. No. And so stump here is not the word you would use if this was referring to Dode. But instead, to someone who's going to dig deep, be nourished by, be rooted in, if you will, what came out of, came forth from Yeshe. Well, the thing that came forth from Yeshe is Dode. You could be grounded and rooted in that, right?
Mm-hmm.
That's what this.
All the time, good stock. You know,
yeah.
Animals or plants or whatever.
Right. Now, Netzer is also an interesting term in that it is clearly a secondary branch, a smaller limb. So if Yeshe and Dode are the two primary limbs off the trunk of this tree of life that is Yahweh's covenant, and one is the word, the other is the deed. And I know my perspective, I actually think that Dode's a more important branch than Yeshe, and I know that's extreme for a lot of people, but there's no question that they are both branches, and they're both exceedingly important. They're both referred to as a branch all the time. It's probably the single most common metaphor used for both of them. And so there are if you're looking at a tree, the two main branches that come off the trunk, that's who they are. The netzer is somewhere way out there. Yeah, I might be supporting a few leaves, but it's just way out there. You know, it is connected directly or indirectly. You know, if you follow the other branches along the way, to the main branch. As a matter of fact, kind of the way it would go is that the Shemach, T-S-E-M-A-C-H, Shemach, is the main branch, left and right of the tree. Yeshe and Dode. A netzer would be a secondary branch coming off of one of those two. And the choder would be a branch off of them, just a twig or a shoot off of one of them.
Okay?
That's where we're going with this. And it's interesting, too, that Yiche, the Jesse is how it's been corrupted into English. There's no J in Hebrew. It's Yiche. And Yiche is important because Yiche conveys the nature of this choter.
Mm-hmm.
The choter is going to do something that doesn't happen very often. A choter is going to stand out. The choder is going to do something that, through most of human history, would cause you to be incarcerated, tortured, publicly humiliated, and killed. Today, with somebody that stands out and is noticed, they just humiliate them. Yeah, just humiliate them. They publicly crucify them. But in the past, you'd be on the rack. Mm-hmm. You'd have one of those devices that the Roman Catholics conceived to elicit confessions that confess more about them than the person they were interrogating.
Well, nothing says love like that, huh?
Yeah, nothing says love like that. So, Yiche, the name, means to do something that is extraordinarily rare, to stand out and be noticed regarding the source of existence. So that's another clue. And as we strive through this chapter to identify the choder who comes off the netzer, that comes off the shamak, that is into the trunk of this tree, and is therefore rooted in the things of Dode, his life and words, he'll never be named. It's always a singular masculine individual, but he's never named.
Mm-hmm.
He is essentially irrelevant. But not what he says, and not what he writes. Because the sign that comes from this choder is something that, in the 11th chapter, God's going to mention three times. He's already mentioned once way back in the 5th chapter. And he's going to mention it three times here, and then he's going to begin the 13th chapter with another reference to this neck, this sign, this banner that Yahweh is lifting up. Now, a sign and banner and neck is, because that's where we're going to come to much later, but that is something that is put on top of an upright pole that is designed to draw attention and convey an extremely important message to those who are observant. So don't just think this is a flag that's waving in the breeze.
Mm-hmm.
There's something written on that. And what's written on it is exceedingly important because God himself is involved lifting it up. And he has a very specific purpose for it. The purpose for it back in Yashaya 5 was to expose the fact that Yahweh and Dode had worked together to plant the ideal vineyard in the ideal location on earth, only to have man corrupted. Here it plays a related but different role. And we were also told that not only is it from the stump, it's from the root of Yesse, that which keeps him anchored and nourished. Continuing to bear an abundance of fruit, being productive while encouraging productivity in others. That's Yeshaya 11:1. Now we're going to return to that, but before we return to it, I want to be really forthright in doing an investigation of choder so that we know what it means. And Kirk, typically when we want to properly define a word that is used infrequently, or a word that's used frequently but it's important, what do we do? What's our first go-to strategy when we want to properly define a noun?
Well, the actionable verb.
Right. We go to the verb. We don't know if there's a verbal root for choder. It's certainly not used anywhere in the Torah, Prophets, and Psalms. And there's no indication that there's a verbal root for choder. Now, I'm not surprised by that, because guess what? Choder describes that which really is insignificant.
Mm-hmm.
So why should there be a verbal root for something that insignificant? When we
could it be chitof?
What's a chitof?
Is to catch or seize, to clutch. It's a verb. It's a stretch, but that's the closest thing I could.
That's the closest thing to it. Yeah. Mm-hmm. No, it.
But there's nothing obvious in there.
And you know, and what does a branch do? It supports the leaves that catch the light.
Mm-hmm.
So that's definitely worth investigating. In fact, after the program today, I'll take a look at that. So our unless you're right, and it's a bit of a stretch, our preferred approach isn't going to provide the answer. Moreover, it doesn't share its three-letter root with any other Hebrew word. That's our second strategy. We always look at, remove the diacritical markings of the Masoretes and the Masoretes, and then look to see, are there other words that are written with the same root? Because most Hebrew words share a three-letter root. Guess how many there are in the Torah, Prophets, and Psalms that share the three-letter root of choder? C-H-T-R. Zero. Look, not surprising again. You know, a choder is a small shoot or secondary branch, a slender stick or twig, a sprout or stem, a pliable wooden implement. This ain't a big deal.
No, it don't sound like a big deal.
No. In fact, that is the... I don't know, I'm making a big deal about how it's not a big deal.
Mm-hmm.
Because that is the essence of being able to tell the story. If choder were a big deal, I wouldn't even tell the story. I would have moved on to the next chapter. I would have left the chapter as I originally wrote it.
Choder might be. Yeah.
And I would have completely ignored it. The very fact that the choder isn't a big deal, and that the choder has the capacity of good or bad, depending on how it's being used, is the only reason I doubled back after I received some constructive criticism and rewrote the chapter as we're going to consider it in these next few programs. It's a big deal that the choder is an insignificant implement, and that it's neither good nor bad in and of itself. Fortunately, or unfortunately, depending on your perspective, the other use of choder is found in a mashal, written, which is a proverb, written by none other than Dode. Now, I must stop there for a moment.
Yes.
The proverbs are all credited to Solomon. And they're credited to Solomon because Solomon is extraordinarily braggadocious. And Solomon said, you know, during my life I wrote, you know, hundreds upon hundreds of these proverbs. But, you know, I've read Ecclesiastes.
Mm-hmm.
We know that he wrote Ecclesiastes. I've read the Song of Solomon. We know he wrote the Song of Solomon. I don't think either one of them were inspired by Yahweh. In fact, I'm positive that Ecclesiastes was not.
Yeah, because his observations. Perfect.
Yeah, it's his own personal observations. There is nothing in the Mashal that suggests that they were written by Solomon. As a matter of fact, the tenor, the tone, the content, the message of the Mashal scream Dode, his father.
Yeah.
And all of the Mashal are written as our Heavenly Father and spiritual mother are writing of their son and to their son. And whether it's Yahweh and the set-apart spirits, advice to and relationship with Dode, or their relationship with any family member written from the perspective of Dode, doesn't really matter because they apply to everyone who wishes to be and who is part of Yahweh's covenant family. That's the purpose of the Mashal. And they reflect Yahweh's relationship with Dode. So I'm convinced that Dode is the author.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, that is not what theologians will tell you.
Yeah.
But, you know, I play with a different deck than they do. You know, from my perspective, all of the cards are laid face up on the table.
Mm-hmm.
And from my perspective, they're all put out and arranged in the proper order. And when you do that, you see a very different picture than you do as they do from their perspective. Their perspective is about knowing and being appearing smart. Mine is from understanding.
Yeah. Well, the beauty of that is it gives you a filter.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
But I was thinking about that yesterday. Is the difference in if I were to just sit down fresh and go through your books
mm-hmm.
and with an open mind
mm-hmm.
and do some of my homework,
mm-hmm.
I could get a really good perspective on exactly what Yah wants, what He's talking
mm-hmm.
about. Because He repeats the theme over and over and over and over, so many
mm-hmm.
themes over and over and over again. And then no matter what you throw at me, if I go downstairs and go through all those
mm-hmm.
giant books.
Religious tomes, right?
Religious mm-hmm. tomes, yes. And I open them up and I'm reading through like I did the other day. I'm going, you know, you people are nuts. And I could sit here and prove it in 5 minutes.
Right. Right.
I mean, if you, you got in a debate with me, I'd slaughter you in front of your own crowd.
Yeah, you know, I think that...
me out, but still.
Exactly. I think that has been one of the most important residual effects of these books, from Yah to Yah to An Introduction to God to Questioning Paul to Prophet of Doom even, and of Observations for Our Time, is that they enable those who have studied what Yahweh has to say and the analysis provided in them with a filter, with the ability to be discriminating and discerning.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're going to translate, you're going to understand, you have to have a filter.
Yeah.
You have to be discerning. You have to know what is true, what is false, what is good, what is bad, what is right, what is wrong. And if you don't have that filter, and that's the whole impetus now of political correctness, is to eliminate that filter. If you don't have that filter, you have zero chance of understanding.
Yeah, you'll just be tossed to the wind.
That's right.
Have a chance.
That's why when we're looking here at Choder, I didn't just write down what everybody did. A stem.
Yeah.
From the stump of Jesse. Now, could it be a stem? Yeah. But what is a stem, and how is it defined in the context of the tree and the metaphors that Yahweh uses?
Mm-hmm.
You know, you have to have a filter if you're going to understand. You got to be discriminating, and if all these books do nothing but help people process the information that's available from God about God, then they've served the purpose.
Sure. Exactly.
So this mashal we're going to find is in mashal. Let's see if the particular mashal is 14, and it's the only other place where Choter is found. And I'm prejudiced here. I'm not without bias. Filter doesn't mean that you don't have bias. I'm prejudiced. I have a bias.
You have a point of view.
I absolutely have a bias. My bias is I want my perspective to be exactly the same as Yahweh's, as high a percentage of the time as is humanly possible.
Sure.
That's my perspective. So Yahweh said that Dod was his favorite wordsmith. He's my singer. He's my songwriter. And so I view Dod, not just because Yahweh said so, but because I've read his lyrics to his song. I think Dod is the greatest wordsmith who ever lived. And so if we can look at Choder's use from the perspective of the ultimate wordsmith, particularly since he is the direct descendant of Yeshe, that ought to give us a pretty good clue as to whether or not a Choder is a good thing, a bad thing, or a neutral thing that can be used either way.
Yeah.
By the time we're finished with...
Keep in mind, though, you get all these Hebrew words can have both positive and negative. You have to look how they're used.
Correct. Correct. The Ana is my favorite example of that.
Mm-hmm.
Ana, if you respond and answer Yahweh's invitations to meet during the Mikre, if you respond to an answer his conditions of his covenant, then you will be able to sing with him. And all of those are definitions, primary definitions of Anah. And that Yahweh himself afflicted his own soul, abased it, diminished it. Between Pesach and Matzah, so that we would be in a position to Anah answer and respond in this way. But if you do not answer and respond, Anah, the positive side of Anah, then your soul is going to be diminished, can be afflicted, the negative side of Anah. So a perfect example of how a Hebrew word can have a light or dark connotation depending on our response, our own choices in life. For example, Yare. Yare is to revere and respect.
Yeah.
If you revere and respect Yahweh, you will never fear him.
Yeah.
If you do not revere and respect Yahweh, you will come to fear him.
Mm-hmm.
So those are great examples. Choder can be a good thing. You know, there are bad shoots, there are good shoots. There are bad limbs, there are good limbs. Now, I'm into gardening. I go out all the time, and I prune the limbs that are counterproductive to the health of the tree and the appearance of the tree. So a choder in and of itself isn't a bad or good thing, but it can be used in a good or bad way. A great example of this would be, remember we were addressing, speaking of the Assyrian, and the Assyrian would wield the club or rod of economic oppression, the scepter of political oppression, the staff of religious oppression, or the spear of military oppression.
All four.
But you know that Yahweh is authorized to deploy those same implements?
Sure.
Now, he doesn't use them to oppress, but he uses them symbolically. It comes out of the words of his mouth. But he has a scepter. He has a staff
and
to lead his sheep.
Obviously, Dode went through Yehuda. That was
right.
Jacob's promise.
Right. Yeah. You know, Dode carried a staff when he was a shepherd. Good thing. So did Moshe. Good thing. Yahweh refers to himself with his staff, you know. Good thing for a shepherd.
Sure.
But the Pope carries a staff, and there's an example of it being used in a very negative way.
Yes.
So, ra'ah, the Hebrew word for shepherd, since we're speaking of it. Ra'ah can mean to lead, to guide, to protect, and to nourish sheep.
Mm-hmm.
The shepherd with the sheep. But ra'ah also is an evil and wicked companion that leads astray. That's a marvelous thing about translating Hebrew, is that so many words have a dark and light side, and it's the context that tells you what they mean in that particular sentence. And it's always the negative side. If it's a positive connotation, the positive connotation always opens you up to the realization that your choices regarding your perspective on Yahweh is going to determine whether that positive application applies to you, or if you reject Yahweh, as Christians and Muslims do, or secular humanists do, whether the negative applications apply to you. So it's really a marvelous language in that regard. It originally was frustrating, because if you're not, if your perspective is wrong, if you're not, you don't have a good filter, you know, you can very often have a correct definition that's wrong in that particular sentence.
Mm-hmm.
So it takes some work. That's kind of the fun of the whole thing, right?
Yes, sir.
All right, so we're going to jump back in time 300 years. Dode's life was lived 300 years before Yeshayah. Yeshayah is 745 to about 700, and Dode was right around, let's say, 1,050 to, or 1,000 maybe, 40 to 970-ish.
Yeah.
Okay. BCE. So here is how Dode uses it. I have to begin at the beginning of the Mashal. It doesn't come up until the third or I think it's the third or fourth verse of it. I think it's third. But I don't know of any other way than to begin at the beginning, so we're going to begin at the beginning. It begins, a wise, Shemakuth, the thinking and prudent, the most skillful and capable, the properly instructed and learned, learned, actually. It's from Chakam, to learn and then teach. Woman, Isha, wife and mother. It's also maternal fire, motherly light, and feminine enlightenment, Isha. Builds, Bana. She constructs and establishes, restoring and perpetuates the family name of her home and family. Let me read that just again without all of the amplification. A wise woman builds her home and family. But the foolish and perverse, the evil, it's from evil, from became evil in English, but the foolish and perverse tears it down with their own hands. That's Mashal, Proverbs 14:1. Now, I don't want to minimize the value of motherly love, but you'll note that according to God, when it comes to building a home, intelligence trumps emotion.
Mm-hmm.
That's pretty profound, isn't it?
Oh, yeah.
Counterintuitive for most people. That should not be surprising for both, because for both men and women, nothing matters more than being right. The second line. He who walks, hu halak, travels through life going, in what he knows to be right, straightforward and honest, in his integrity and righteousness, in his direct, smooth, and straight path, respects and reveres, admires and appreciates Yahweh. That's pretty marvelous. So he who walks in what he knows to be right, in a straightforward and honest way, respects and reveres Yahweh. But he who is devious and goes the wrong way along his own perverted and crooked path, who departs from the way and who is lost from view, he who has corrupted the way by creating his own twists and turns, disregards and despises him. Mm. Now, it's counterintuitive, Kirk, but
yes.
The religious are devoted, and so devoted they are, to their mythical deity. They not only view Yahweh as a rival, they despise him and his Torah. Yeah, you bring up Yahweh to a Jesus-pronouncing Christian, and they get mad.
I've experienced it.
Yeah, Yahweh is a rival to those who are promoting the myth of a Jesus Christ. And if you quote from his Torah, they hate it. Just as Paul did.
Then he'll hit you back with Galatians or something.
Yeah.
Oh, God.
So he who, he who is devious and goes the wrong way along his own perverted and crooked path, he was corrupted the way by creating his own twists and turns, disrespects and despises him. Yahweh.
You don't have to ask why anymore.
No. Yeah, exactly. We figured it out, but Yahweh is prone to doing. He validates these conclusions. This brings us then to the first use of Choder, and it's far from positive, Kirk. Far from positive.
Yes,
based upon this rendering, this sticker twig is well beneath the status of Yosha and of Dote. It can't be used of either of them. This prophecy, one of the most important in Yashaya, is not speaking of Dote or Yosha based upon this use of the word. In the mouth of the stupidly stubborn, evil again, the base of the English word evil, of the simpleton, who is an idiot, and fails to comprehend, of the defiantly ignorant and irrational who mocks the truth by promoting deceptions, of the argumentative and licentious, of the unthinking citizenry who are so adverse to understanding, they're thoughtless and quarrelsome and foolish. Is an arrogant, self-exalting, that's ga'awa, an overly proud, self-elevating, and self-aggrandizing, and yet majestic-appearing Choder. Pliable implement, an unproductive sucker.
Choder.
Small shoot, a secondary branch, a slender stick or twig, a sprout. You know, by the way, you know, you talk about a secondary branch.
Mm-hmm.
With the choder in this context. You know, one of the problems with both Islam and Christianity, and more Christianity than Islam, is that, damn it, Paul and Muhammad didn't go out and plant their own damn tree.
No.
What they did, and that's the truth of the Babylonian religion and the Egyptian religion and the Roman religion and the Greek religion, Satan never inspired anyone to plant their own damn tree and to cultivate their own damn tree. 100% of the case, they try to graft themselves into the life that and tree that Yahweh planted. And that's what this is saying. They're a secondary stem or branch they've tried to graft in place, but it ain't happening.
Mm-hmm.
And therefore, there are now two adjectives defining Choder here.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that doesn't say that choder is a bad thing, but in the mouth of the stupidly stubborn and the self-exalting, the choder is a pliable implement, an unproductive sucker. Now, that said, there is no chance whatsoever. None. Zero. Not one in a trillion that choder can be used, even if you look at its most positive attributes. It's an untrained tendril that therefore can be trained and could be productive and used. You can't use that in relation to Yosha.
No.
And that isn't the direction that Doe's life took. Hey, Doe didn't start off as untrained and unruly and then somehow become refined.
Right.
Not him either. And he certainly couldn't have used this word and then to have Yashaya turn around and use it against him.
No. It's fair. Yeah.
Right.
Very good.
Now, I will tell you that all being the case, there's nothing wrong with being a choder. You know, so long as you're not a choder who is a ploy of the general or the president or the pope. If you're the pope's choder, if you're the general's choder, if you're the president's choder, you are exactly what Dodd is depicting here in Proverbs 14:3. But you can be Yahweh's choder.
And want to be.
Absolutely. You know, it means you're a bit player. You're unnamed, but, you know, I asked you before we began the program.
Yes, sir.
What do you want in life? Do you want to be a big fish in a little pond? Or do you want to be a really little fish in a really big sea? Which one do you want? There's a profound difference between the two.
Mm-hmm.
This choder is a really small twig in a really big tree, but it's the tree of life. Where, you know, the President of the United States is a really big fish and just really a passing fancy amongst the parade of nations.
Hey, it's going to be over.
Yeah. Which one do you want? Would you, given the opportunity to have a small bit part, an unnamed part, but in the greatest saga, the greatest drama to ever exist, the play of life, would you sign up to be just an unnamed stick?
Absolutely.
In that?
Or in anything.
Yeah. And that's what a choder is.
Yeah.
That's grafted into the right tree, if the implement is wielded by a positive influence, pretty pretty good gig. You know, it gets back to, you know, how many times have we talked about throughout this program that, you know, if I were asked to define what I'm doing here, that the best I can come up with is that just a flawed, dented, and dirty implement in the right hands. And so the implement is irrelevant. But what is produced by that implement in the right hands is important. Valuable.
Yeah.
Well, that's what the Choder is describing. This then continues, and this is the end of Mashal word pictures, Proverbs 14, 1 through 3. It reads, "But the lips, the language of the learned and wise, the chakam." We're going to see that word again. In fact, in Yeshaya 11:2, chakam. "Of the learned and wise, of the one who learns, comes to understand, and then teaches." Well, they're observant and focused. The words, the lips, the words, the language of the learned and wise, of the one who comes to understand and then teaches, they're observant and focused.
I know somebody like that.
I know an implement that strives to be like that. From Dode's perspective,
yes,
in composing this mashal, the Choder was a bad thing, or perhaps more accurately, could at times manifest negative characteristics. Yeah. As a twig, it would be susceptible to bending rather than being dependable and steadfast. As a skinny stem, it would be blown around in the wind. As a less productive sucker, it would be a source of wild growth, incapable of bearing fruit. And as a small stick or thin rod, it might set a different standard or serve as a short-lived implement of control, which would be prone to breaking. Then, as a pliable implement, an unruly and untrained tendril, this individual's words would convey man's notions and be subject to evil influences. Now, Dode wasn't perfect, far from it. But as I mentioned before, Kirk, I can't fathom Yashaya using Choder to describe him, not after what he has written about Dode's vineyard and kingdom in the 5th and 9th chapter of Yashaya.
Kingdom and calling the Choder at the same breath? No, I don't think so.
No.
Come on.
Yeah, he worked with Yahweh to plant the garden, and now you're going to say that, oh yeah, well, he was untrained.
He's a lousy gardener.
Tendril in that garden? No. He is the co-worker who planted the daggone garden with God.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. No.
He's from the big root.
Right. And even if you were to concur with what seems to be the implication of what we're reading, that Dode is, always will be, even more important than Yosha, it is unreasonable to think that Yahweh would inspire anyone to refer to the perfect Passover lamb as a Choder.
Mm-hmm. No.
Therefore, as the word implies, apart from its source, apart from how it is used and who is deploying it, the Choder is little more than a pliable implement.
Yeah.
An otherwise irrelevant sprout compared to the mighty branches of Dode and Yosha.
Some of this is so easily, I mean, it's just so logical. It's right before your face. You can't, come on.
You have to take the time.
Rule that out.
Yeah, you've got to be completely open and completely rational using an effective filter.
Yeah.
So it's like everything where God says, you know, my Torah is easy to understand. Well, it is, but you've got to spend the time. You have to have an open mind. You have to be rational through the whole thing. If you're not discerning, it's not the case.
Yeah.
So in this case, you can get there. Any of us can get to where we have just gotten. But it takes some work. It's worth doing, though, isn't it?
Yes, sir. Here.